I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, guess what? Have I got a treat for you today. Here, without my buddies, everybody's here today except for Jim, the contrarian. So that means it'll kind of go a little easier than it normally does. With me here today is Jack Rock and Roll Race Car Patterson. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Joe. It's great to be back.
And Bill, the man of faith, Dallas. Our guy in the background that always makes us do the right thing. Bill, how are you?
I am fired up for today, Joe.
I'm so glad you guys are back. So there's so much going on out in the world, and I know if anybody's been listening, I hope you guys listen when you're not on the show, but I got to tell you, I've been running it solo, and there's been so much going on. Every week I have 25 or 30 things that I want to get to, and I get to 5 or 6 of them, and before I get back to that pile, everything's changed again, and things are going crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at what's going on with our president. We see how the entire nonsense, which I think we talked about this for the last bunch of months, that this investigation has been absolutely bogus, and it's all starting to come out now. We've called it a coup, and it is a coup, and they almost got away with it. It's amazing right in front of us. I talked one time a couple of weeks ago about there better be some kind of satisfaction, not for people who just want to see Trump's enemies get into trouble, but for justice in our country. There had better be some reckoning to fix what went on, because they almost took this country over going through the back door. And the only reason, and remember this, you heard this here, Chasing Justice family, the only reason they did all of this is because they thought Hillary was going to win and we would never know about any of it. It's the only reason they did it all so blatantly and with such gusto, because they just figured it didn't matter what they did. She's going to win. And that's going to be the end of it. You're never going to hear it or see it again. So that's kind of where we're going. We're going to talk about that today. And I really want to see what everybody's been up to. Jack, Rock and Roll Race Car, how you been, buddy?
Good, Joe. Good. Everything's going well. Glad to be back.
You've been racing? What have you been doing?
Oh, every weekend, sometimes twice a weekend. Motorcycles, race cars, everything. It's just been crazy. It's my first weekend off in about a month and a half.
Are you winning any?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Absolutely. I've got pictures to prove it.
Now, I'm going to throw in a question for or a statement for the contrarian, who couldn't be with us today. Well, really, racing is not a sport. Go ahead, Jack, answer that.
Being Jim is not being human. So anyway,
a shot in the eye.
I've been away for a long time. I'm glad to be back, and I'm an avid listener of America Out Loud in general, and especially Chasing Justice, and a couple of the points that you were hitting upon as I was listening while we were dearly departed there for a short period of time. The one that really struck me the hardest was the Kate Smith.
Hmm.
Her singing of America the Beautiful and God Bless America and other anthems of our country such as this. The people attacked her because many, many years ago, I forget how many years it must have been.
It was the 1930s.
Yeah, it was in the 30s. Okay. So she sang some things that were socially acceptable at that time, and now we don't feel that they're socially acceptable. Remember, everybody, anybody listening right now, we right now refer to groups of people. We have certain names that we use that are socially acceptable at this time. You know, 60 years from now, 70 years from now, they might condemn you for using a term such as African American or Hispanic. That might turn out to be something that's very, very hurtful in the future. So let's remember that. And also, the people who are condemning this woman passed away many years ago. She was an American singing icon. You're so brave. Why do you not go after the people who are currently singing and using terminology that makes women into prostitutes or bitches? Why don't we go after those people? Is that not offensive, or is that covered under the ever so comforting blanket of art?
Well, no, it depends on what kind of art.
Well, if you're
depends on what kind of art.
If you're so brave to go after a woman who passed away years ago, who can't defend herself or speak to the fact that these things may or may not have been acceptable in that time and, of course, are not now, and not even allowing her to use her voice to apologize or to explain because she cannot. You're so brave. Go after these people who are calling women nothing more than mere sex objects or bitches or what have you. I hear it all day. I hear it every day. So when I see you going after these people who are alive and kicking right now, then I'll have some.
Well, so Jack, let's talk about that for a minute.
Well,
because
yeah, you know,
I think your point about 60 years from now is true. This is the danger of going after free speech.
Well, you
free
know,
speech is meant to be, if it's ugly, don't listen to it. But you got to let people say what they're going to say.
There's a song out there that I like. It comes from the mid-90s, but it has a line in it that I've kind of taken as my own personal anthem to people such as this who attack dead people and what they've done 70 years ago, 80 years ago. It's, I'd rather be insulted by you than someone I respect.
Jack, thank you for that editorial. I appreciate it. Big Bill, where have you been? What have you been up to?
There's a lot of stuff going on in my life right now. I've been hanging out with my grandkids. I love doing that. I've semi-retired.
Really?
I'm only working 3 days a week now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
Well, you're 94 years old. It's about time you slow down.
It is, right? I've got a lot of church activities that are going on. We're having, you know, leadership meetings and things like that. But, you know, it's all good. I've got my son and his family coming up in a few weeks. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, that's excellent.
I very rarely
you
got to
see your face light up when you talk about your grandchildren. You
yeah.
got a great big smile you get on your face.
Well,
that's
I've only
really
got
awesome.
Five, you know, so.
Only five. Yeah, well, you know, I'm joining that crowd now.
Yeah, I
hear you. Our lawyer of record, Joe Pangaro Jr., the lawyer of record for Chasing Justice, him and his beautiful bride, Adeline, are, as they say, with child. And they're looking for an October jump out, so I'm going to have baby at Christmas time.
That is so
and I'm looking,
wonderful.
And I'm going to smile on my
yeah,
face.
Yeah, there you go.
I thought I was done with kids, you know, after all my kids growing up and the diapers and the this and the that. It was nice to have some peace and quiet, but I can't wait for the babies. I'm very excited. So we're all hoping and praying, and everybody out there in Chasing Justice Land, if you could, please throw some prayers for Joe and Adeline and the little baby. We don't know if it's boy or girl. They're calling it Thumper. Because they don't want to know if it's boy or girl until it's born. So any prayers you could throw their way would be greatly appreciated by me, and I'm sure by them. So here we go. Now, Jack, you said you've been listening, and the topics that have been coming up, people have been emailing, and I don't know if you've seen the Twitter account, at Pangaro Global. You just got to see the wonderful people out there that really liked the show. People were asking me, sending emails, hey, where's the neighborhood, fellas? Where'd everybody go? We like the neighborhood in the afternoon. So I thought you'd find that heartwarming to have you guys in here. Now, Bill, for whatever reason, you always have a ton of things to talk about. You sit and research. So why don't you lead us off today here in the neighborhood on Chasing Justice?
Well, the one thing that really gets to me is when someone who doesn't know what they're talking about attacks religious liberty and pro-life advocates. And this Democrat, Ilhan Omar, she's a Democrat from Minnesota, she unleashed a scathing statement on the House floor on May 22nd in which she attacked conservatives and pro-life Americans, accusing them of hypocrisy and inconsistency, among a whole lot of other things. She was responding to a wave of pro-life bills that have recently swept state legislature, and she was wrong point after point after point.
There's
three ways. There's three ways that she showed she doesn't understand pro-life. She was saying pro-life Americans are not theocrats. Here's what she said. Religious fundamentalists are currently trying to manipulate state laws in order to impose their beliefs on an entire society, all with complete disregard for voices and the rights of American women. The recent efforts, like those in Alabama and Georgia, are only the latest in a long history of efforts to criminalize women for simply existing, to punish us when we don't conform to their attempts to control us. But because it's happening here with the support of the ultra-conservative religious right, we call it religious freedom. So Omar here, she's saying that people who advocate for the unborn through legislation, like the abortion bans passed in Alabama and Georgia, are simply religious people trying to impose their beliefs on society under the guise of religious
freedom. All right, so let's jump on that for a minute. Trying to impose your religious views on anybody. Now, I've had this position all along, and Jack, you got a little bit of a different position, and that's fine. This is who we all are. By saying, what about the baby? That's all I'm saying. What about the baby? And then they want to go into this argument that it's not a baby. Now, you see, they have the heartbeat bill. When the heartbeat starts, that's when you can't have an abortion. So they're saying, unfortunately, most women don't even know that they're pregnant by the time the heartbeat starts. So then that would make that abortion illegal, and therefore they don't have their rights to their reproductive rights. I get that. I understand this is what they believe. But the reality is, let's talk about the baby for a change. Nobody wants to tell this woman what to do, but once there's a baby, there's a human being there, when does that child have its rights? Well, the problem is, in our country, we don't recognize a unborn baby as a person. It is simply part and parcel of the mother, and that's where the whole idea of the ability to have the abortion comes from, because it's part of the mother, and therefore it's her body, and she should be able to do with her body as she wishes. I don't want to impose anything on anybody. Let's just ask about the baby. What about the baby? You know, that's where I see this.
I would love to be able to ask the baby, but who is going to be an advocate for the baby?
We see puppies, and puppies are killed or injured by people who are very cruel to these animals. I love puppies. You know we love puppies here. Mm. We have all kinds of dogs and cat rescues here. We love these animals. But these very same people that would turn the world upside down for a dog, a cat, or a snail dart or fish are perfectly fine with killing babies after they're born now. Now that's okay. We really have to look in the mirror and say, is that okay? At the moment of birth, it's still okay to kill that baby or after.
You can't look at yourself in the mirror and say it's okay to extinguish the life of a living child, such as they've done in New York. Anything for a vote, as I've called it. As far as the other is concerned, I'm going to stick by my previous statements, which are, it's a woman's decision. It's a woman's choice. It's a woman's subject. We can sit, we could talk about it. We can bring up points, good, bad, and indifferent, but it's still a woman's choice. And by saying choice, I'm still going to stand behind that actual word, choice. It's going to be her choice. And especially for the states that are closing the door on situations such as rape or incest, honestly, I don't believe that the God that I know would want that to happen to this woman.
I think that there's always someone out there that is just looking for someone, a baby to adopt, even if it was it happened in those sort of situations of incest and rape. You know, instead of aborting that baby, put it up for adoption. There are so many people out there that are willing and able and financially and morally willing to take care of that baby.
And you know what, Bill? I'm not going to shoot down your proposal. I'm not going to turn my back on your idea and your suggestion. I happen to agree with it partially and still say it's a woman's position.
Gee, did you guys just have a conversation? You actually talked two different points of view and you had a conversation, you made points?
Jim is the one I don't like, Jim. I like Bill. He's my buddy.
All right, Bill, you got point number two of your 3 points. Point two of three.
All right. Pro-life Americans have a huge track record for caring for mothers and children. Because now, Omar went off to impugn the motives of religious conservatives, accusing them not only of not caring for the unborn, but for mothers and children. Here's what she said. Let's be honest. For the religious right, this isn't simply about their care or concern for life. If they cared about or were concerned about children, they would be concerned about the children who are being detained and dying in camps across our border, or the children who are languishing in hunger and facing homelessness. Now, this is something that's been that we've been discussing and going on and on and on. But what is true is that Roe versus Wade ignited a wave of activism that created optic centered on defending the unborn. The fact is that pro-life Americans care about whole life, born and unborn, and the data proves it. 2018, 2 million women were served through pregnancy resource centers, according to one poll. These centers exist not just to keep a woman from aborting, but to help a woman should she decide to raise the baby or put the baby up for adoption even.
That's amazing. And there are people, you're right, there are so many people that look for children, and I get it. But I can also understand a girl who's been sexually assaulted or brutalized and she's pregnant. I kind of get where that baby doesn't seem like a baby. It seems like the rapist is there. So I understand. That's an emotional point for me. That's an emotional point. But I think that's where we have to talk about this stuff.
And in the same instance, while we speak of abortion, I'd like to know where these people stand. I'd like to know maybe where Bill stands, because I'm very curious on the morning after drugs such as RU486. These essentially will do the same thing chemically as an abortion clinic would do.
And that's within the very few first week or so.
Now, once again, we're on a slippery slope here as far as what are they going to think about that in the states where they've already passed these strict abortion laws? Are they going to also outlaw a woman's access to this drug and drugs like it?
Mm-hmm. What I've always said...
Or should they, Bill?
And what I've always admonished is that the responsibility for any pregnancy begins at inception. And when you walk into a bedroom, that's where it starts. That's where the responsibility lies. And I don't know where you stand on contraception, but if you can't take the responsibility of handling a pregnancy or supporting a child, you should not have the ability to make it happen. That's what I think.
So you should try and prevent it before it's conceived, is what you're saying.
Well, you should have the moral responsibility to know what you're about to do.
Okay, so the argument is this. You're telling people that they have these amorous feelings of love. They end up with someone that they really care about. The moment happens and they're supposed to go, oh, wait a minute, I don't have any birth control. I shouldn't do this. You're going to deny them that act of sexual love because at that moment, they don't have birth control. I'm not saying you would do that, but this is what people say. They should be able to act on these feelings when it happens. But isn't that irresponsible to do that if you don't want to get pregnant?
Absolutely.
I don't know. That sounds to me like it would be.
Abstinence is difficult for a lot of people, especially when you're younger and you've got all this testosterone and all these hormones are raging, but to be morally responsible and adult, you have to know what the consequences are. And if you go into a relationship with the idea that you're going to have sex with your partner, then you have to know what that involves.
Right. And that could involve a pregnancy.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Excellent. All right. Point number three, Bill.
All right.
Point three of three. Jack, okay. Is this point three of three?
This would be number three.
This is Bill. Number three. Go.
Pro-life Americans are not forcing religion on anyone. Omar accused religious liberty advocates of being duplicitous. And I get frustrated every time I hear people speaking about their personal faith and pushing that onto other people, because we know those so-called religious politicians, when it comes to their life, their choices, they want to talk about freedom. But when it comes to other people's lives and other people's choices, they want to talk about religion. People who passionately advocate for the unborn are often accused of trying to push their faith on others, but nothing could be further from the truth. Omar suggested that pro-life legislators are passing six-week abortion bans in the name of religious freedom. This is also untrue. The right to free exercise of religion is, of course, vitally important, but a six-week abortion ban is not dependent upon religion. Science itself makes the case against abortion. Life is a right, and if life begins at conception, these unborn babies deserve legal protection afforded to them by the state.
So here we need some politicians to jump up, because what do we have? We have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So why don't we take a rapist, killer, murderer's life? Why are all these states banning that? Because the Constitution is clear. If you are convicted of a crime, one of the things you can lose is your life. You can forfeit your life based on law. That is the penalty you pay for doing such a horrendous crime. Mm. So if we've turned around and said, no, we won't take the killer's life because life is valuable, why would we take the baby's life? The problem is they're not defining it as a life. That's what they hang on to. There's been no Supreme Court case that has come out and said the baby from conception is a human being. If that was one of the cases that the court is hearing right now, if one of these courts came out and said it is now a life from conception, that would overturn Roe versus Wade because the child would immediately have the rights of a person and you can't just execute it.
Plus, your comment about killers, they have lawyers and advocates that can speak for them. The baby has no one unless we legislate it.
Wow. Well, hey, those 3 points were excellent. It's nice to have you guys back. We went really long in this segment, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to round two, ding, 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 here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here we have the fellas in the neighborhood, Jack Rock and Roll Race Car Patterson, and Bill, the man of faith, Dallas. And Bill really is a man of faith. He has helped me over the years to understand my faith better, which is funny because we're from two different faiths within the same faith. But his dedication to God really made me think a lot about what was my dedication to God. So thank you, Bill, for that, because you actually live it, though. See, that's the difference. A lot of people don't. Bill actually does. He really lives his faith. Most people have a faith in their mouth, blah, 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 and then they go and do whatever. And I'm sometimes guilty of that. Not often. I try to do the right thing, but sometimes. Bill is not. Bill does the right thing all the time. So you're a very good example for people, Bill.
I appreciate you saying that, Joe, but I am not always walking the line. Everybody stumbles now and then.
Hey, I got those videos. I never let them out. Don't worry about it. It's all good. It's all good.
I always have my prayers out for that forgiving God that I've heard so much about.
You know, that's an interesting thing. I heard this the other day. I'm trying to remember where I heard it about forgiveness. Where did I hear this? There was a riff about forgiveness. And I had mentioned this once before, but I got to tell you, just while you're bringing that up, Jack, what is this whole thing with forgiveness? I remember... as a kid, I had been hurt by some family members. Not physically hurt, emotionally hurt. And I carried it with me for my whole life. And I found it to be very, very painful and burdensome. Whenever I thought about those family members, it weighed on me. It made me uncomfortable. It made me angry. My brother, who I love my brother, he still suffers from that same emotional burden from when we were little kids. And when I got to be, I don't know how long, I'm 57 now, so probably when I was 45, maybe after my son Jack was born, I was 42, and I'm trying to decide, you know, I was so angry with these people, and this pain was just overwhelming, and was also a loss, because it was a pain of loss of those family members that I cared about when I was a kid. Well, slowly but surely, I had heard in church one day about forgiveness. And I started thinking about it, and immediately, I got to tell you, it seemed like a cop-out. Well, if I just forgive him, I get to have him back in my life again. Wouldn't that be cool? But that didn't work after a while because that pain was still there. And I actually ended up at a family event where some of them were there. And I was trying that on. Let me try that on. If I just forgive, it'll be cool. And I went over and I talked, and you know what? They didn't even acknowledge what had happened. It was like it never happened for them, but... I said, this is fake forgiveness because I'm still really angry. I'm still really upset. And then about, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months later, I ended up at another event where some of these people were at. And I'll never forget one of them. And I'm trying not to mention any names. One of them said to me, you know, way back when you were a kid, I'm sorry we didn't stay in contact. I'm sorry we didn't come to look after you after your father died. We should have probably done that, and I don't know why we didn't. And this person started crying. And they were an older person, and they started crying. And I saw the pain on their face for having done that and realizing the pain they must have caused, that my heart melted. All of that anger, for all of it, dissipated. I said a prayer, and it went away. And it's like almost overnight, it went away. And I felt such pity and sorrow for this person that I loved to be sitting there crying because they thought they hurt me. And I thought they never even realized that that happened. So this thing of forgiveness, I have talked about it. I've written about it. And it really is, I've seen it transform people's lives. Because you know what happens? I don't think about it anymore. I don't think about those, that pain is gone. It has opened up a world, not only for me and my wife, but for my kids. My kids are friends with all of those family members that as though it never happened to them because they didn't even know about it. But what an amazing thing to open up that whole world of family to everyone. Really very, very powerful, the whole forgiveness thing. So when you say that, Jack, that it really is amazing. So I don't know where I heard it. I heard somebody talking about it the other day, but it brings it up. All right, so where are we going here? We have a shortened segment here. We went a little long the last time because we have a lot to say going in there. Let's take a look at the world around us. Jack, you had something to say about the politics. You were asking about the investigation or something. What was on your mind?
You know what? It's just a jumble of things that are going on in the world, as everybody knows. I just feel that anybody who sides with or tries to help anybody in the Democratic Party, if they do not say what the Democratic Party wants to hear, they are then villainized and investigated, much as the people who didn't tell them what they wanted to hear about President Trump. Those people are now vilified, being beaten up in the public eye, in the media. And we do not hear anything about what President Trump was speaking about, the investigation of Hillary. We're not hearing about this. We're not hearing what's come up, what we've found out. It all seems to be buried. It all seems to be hidden. And it's just something that I wanted to bring up. I didn't want to sit here and just go on and on about it. But I'm curious.
Why is that important to you that we find out about Hillary? Hillary's old news, right? She's gone now.
Well,
why is that important?
You know, ladies and gentlemen, we all know the truth from the lies. We all know when somebody's doing something despicable and when they're not. The investigation went on for 2 years. It burned my tax money and yours. It's over now. The president is trying to move the country forward, whether it be in foreign policy or especially in job building, trying to bring back not only jobs but industry to this nation. The reason why we're talking tariffs and the reason why we're being so tough with other countries is to try and get those businesses that used to make steel and iron and aluminum and cars and everything else here. We're trying to get that basis back. That's why we have such a good relationship with Japan, because Japan is not only in favor of but encouraging manufacturers such as Toyota and Honda and companies such as this to bring the plant here. Let's face it, we're going to buy Japanese cars. We're going to buy American cars. But let's face it, when you look out on the highway, everybody, they're all out there to see. We're going to buy Japanese cars. So wouldn't it be better if they were being built by Americans and American factories and supporting American towns and American families?
And that's all connected with Hillary, because you don't think we haven't heard anything about it. And there's no justice there.
It's funny, because I guess the roundabout point that I'm bringing up is we don't hear about the good. All we hear about is the bad. And we don't hear about anybody who doesn't wish to be heard from on the Democratic side. It's bash the president, no respect for the presidency whatsoever. And in the meantime, this man is doing such great things in the background. He is teaching countries his art of the deal. And we're benefiting from it. We have the lowest unemployment ever since, I believe, it was 1969. The lowest African-American unemployment ever. The lowest Hispanic unemployment ever. And we don't harp on these daily, but we harp on the other points. We harp on the attacks.
It shows you the power of the... I remember Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan would come out and say the media, if they say something, most people think that that's what it is. And this is where fake news comes from. This is the power they have. But your point is really good, Jack, in that we don't hear about these good things. We just hear the negative, and where do we go from there?
And Ronald Reagan, if you want to bring it up just real quickly, I won't harp on it, but Ronald Reagan in his second term said, you want to listen to the media, go ahead, but I'm going to tell you the truth. And in his second term, I really think the American public hung on his word and believed in his honesty.
Oh, no, there was no doubt. I remember it. He was a very popular president, and the media still went crazy on him. He was nuts. He was sleeping. He didn't really run the government. His wife ran the government. They do the same thing to conservatives over and over and over. In the meantime, you got a knucklehead of a president, and nobody pays attention because he's a Democrat. Has he been vetted? Did they vet Barack Obama at all? Did they vet Hillary at all? Trump, he said one thing to one person somewhere, and they spent months and months and months on one comment.
Right? On our tax dollar.
Unbelievable.
You know, you talked about the news media, Jack. I'm going to quote my favorite author, that unbelievable philosopher Mark Twain. He says, if you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. But if you do read the newspaper, you're misinformed.
Ill-informed, yes.
You know?
Yes.
And how true is that?
Yes.
Because
funny,
the media is controlling what is the truth. Unfortunately, what they say is the truth.
This is important, Bill, because it's the people who run the media. It's one thing if we hear a screeching sound in the street here, and we hear a crash, and now we hear people screaming and running around. We run outside, and we see that a gasoline truck collided with a school bus, and we call the news company and we say, "Hey, listen, at 2:35 in this afternoon, sitting there, a gasoline truck from ABC Gas Company crashed into a school bus from, you know, Happy Land School. Three children were injured. The bus driver was intoxicated, and so was the truck driver, and they were both arrested." That's the news. We told the story. We didn't give an opinion on who should have been driving, what they were doing. They could turn it around the other way. The gasoline company, you know, one of the big gasoline companies that are out to take everyone's money, allow their drivers to drink while they're on lunch, and that caused their severe injuries. So they twist the story instead of just reporting it.
There's certain truths out there that no one can deny. People want the sensationalized news. That's what they're going to watch. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what anybody thinks, does, or says,
news That's what sells newspapers.
News on TV.
If it leads, it
newspaper,
leads.
All the media.
If it bleeds, it leads. Sorry, wrong way. Backwards.
It's a business. It's a business. Right. At the basis of it all, you're watching Channel 4, you're watching Fox News, whatever you're watching, it's a business. They right. have to turn a profit, otherwise they're out in the street.
That's just like everybody says every year, these politicians, they get in there, so we don't want people, you know, we don't want mudslinging. We want an honest campaign. But then people come out and start slinging mud and they rise up in the polls.
But you know what? You know, telling the truth and only stating the facts, it sells, because look at Huntley Brinkley. They never did it exaggerated. They never gave opinions. Walter Cronkite, he sat there, he read fact after fact after fact. People tuned into him every single night to listen to what is going on in our world, and they believed him because it was the truth.
Mm-hmm. But they treated us as adults. Huntley Brinkley Report, as I've stated on this show many times, as well as the others that you have stated, gave us the fact. We're free American citizens. We have the right to our opinion. But to force the opinion down the throats of the American people through the use of the media is wrong. And it's unfortunate that the American public is the American public that puts more money into National Enquirer magazine than it does in a substantial newspaper.
So we see Fox News is always the most popular news network. Poll after poll, year after year, year in, year out, they are the most popular news network. And why is that?
I'll tell you one thing. Back in the Vietnam War, they're the ones that started that scroll underneath, where they were telling you one or two other news things while the video of certain combat situations were going on. They were giving you all the news that they could possibly give you at one time without commentary. And that's how they started it. That's how they became so popular.
That's interesting. I didn't know they were around that long.
Yeah, they were.
Okay. So we're running down on time on this particular segment. I want to talk for a couple of minutes. We had some horrific incidents take place again in our country. Terrible. We saw the shooting in Virginia Beach where we had the guy come back and shoot up. Actually, he was employed there. Apparently, he gave his resignation in the morning, and then he came back in the afternoon with 45 caliber handguns, and he shot up the place, and he killed 12 people altogether, and he was killed himself. This happens over and over and over again. Now, I've mentioned this in previous weeks. I talked about this when it happened, but the reason I'm bringing it up now is my company, True Security Design, we are a group that consults on safety and security issues. We go out, we do threat assessments at your facility. We also do student-based and employee-based threat assessments to try and help you develop a team that can look at a threat when a threat comes in, whether it's verbal, social media, rumor, a written note, a drawn note, anything like that, to help you evaluate that threat and to intervene before somebody gets hurt. Now, I talk about the company here when we do our show because I want people to know what I'm doing out there, and that's a really good thing. But I'm telling you, it is time for people to reach out to me and let us help you because we see this over and over again, and we find out, I ask people, are you prepared? No, they don't do anything where I work. In my school, we do a little bit. We do some stuff. I just did a school program the other day, and there was about 50, 60 school districts there. And I did a program on threat assessments and student threat assessments. And I got so many questions from people. How do you do it? How do you set it up? We didn't even know this was out there. Well, Homeland Security said last year, a year ago, that every school district should have a team that's set up to evaluate threats, to be a student threat assessment team. That is what I teach. So if you have friends and family who are in schools, you have children, you have friends and family who are teachers, they should reach out to me. They should go to www.truesecuritydesign.com and let us help you. If you have a business workplace type of a thing where you have people working together, we can come in and we can help you make your place safer, train you, get everybody ready. I'll be going this week to a couple of big property management companies in New York City, training the people who rent these huge office space areas in Manhattan to train their groups individually how to spot potential violence and how to respond. This is what we all have to learn to do. TrueSecurityDesign.com, www.TrueSecurityDesign.com. Call me. Find us on the Twitter at Pangaro Global. All right, we'll be back in a minute with round three.
I'm going to ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Here we go to round three here on Chasing Justice with the gentleman in the neighborhood here. So I'm glad to have everybody back. You know, one of the things we wanted to talk about is this. We talk about seasons, okay? The season, spring season, summer season. As the weather's getting warmer, everybody wants to go do fun things. But recently we saw our president and the president of France celebrating the men who brought freedom to Europe on D-Day. It was really an amazing thing. Did you guys see any of that stuff?
Yeah, it was a fantastic show. It's just the coverage of it was excellent. It was really in the good spirit instead of the villainous crap you always hear from the media.
There's a picture I saw on social media, and it was black and white picture of one of the landing boats, you know, where the guys were lined up, you know, 50 of them in the boat, and the landing craft hits the beach, the door drops down, and they go running out. And somebody had colorized the photograph and then sent it out. And I took the picture, and I blew the picture up as I was looking at it. And you look at the faces of these young American kids. They look like little kids. They look like 17, 18-year-old kids with their helmets, their uniform, their rifles. And I think the most poignant thing someone said about that picture, he said, this photograph of these young men, these American heroes going off to do their duty, this was the last few moments of their life. 90% of the first wave were killed getting off the boats trying to hit the beach. 90% of them.
You know, I saw a photograph in one of the news magazines of, it showed an aircraft, the inside with the paratroopers getting ready to jump on D-Day. On the right-hand side, there was black and white photographs of all these young guys, like you were just talking about, getting ready to jump. But on the opposite side, sitting across from them in color, were the same guys 60 years later. And they showed them. And several of them actually jumped.
Yes. Did you see the guy the other day? 97 years old.
No, I thought he was 92.
But 97, still. He jumped out because he wanted to do it. And he was a tough old bird, man. He hit the ground, and him and his guy that he was jumping with, they flopped over onto the old guy. And they got up, and he says, oh, I'm really sorry. And he goes, no big deal. Nobody got hurt. That's an American thing. You know, some of these pictures that we do see, of these military heroes, these men and women who are out there on the front lines every single day, whether they served in combat or they didn't, they're still out there to protect us. And they volunteer now. It's an all-volunteer army. You know, we look at back in World War II, these kids, 16 and 17 years old, you know, they ran in and they signed up to go to battle. They were recruited, of course. You know, in other wars, there was the draft in Vietnam. People were drafted and had to go in, and there's a lot of controversy about that, you know, conscription. But the military we have today, they are all volunteers. They volunteer for this duty to go and do things for us, which I think is absolutely amazing. And looking at those young faces was just overwhelming for me.
You know, I went to, speaking about those volunteers, I went to a memorial service just yesterday of a man who was a veteran. He was 92 years old, and they call him the Hallelujah Man, because whenever he walked into a room, he would yell Hallelujah. He was a faithful, God-fearing man. But the reason I brought this up is because at his funeral service, that he had a military military celebration of his life, and these volunteers came in, and they marched in. It was one fellow marched in. He was like the sergeant at arms, and the respect and the reverence they showed in the flag, and for the deceased veteran, was just amazing. And again, these guys are volunteers, and they do this all the time, on their own time, and they practice and do everything. So today's Army, yes, they're all volunteers. That doesn't make them any less credible, any less patriotic.
I think it makes them more so. They signed up for this.
Absolutely.
And they know what's happening. We're at war around the world. There's people dying all the time. They see it, and they're doing it anyway. Yeah. They are true heroes.
I was lucky enough to learn the story of Omaha Beach and the landings firsthand. My Uncle Pete was a veteran, Second World War. Actually, on every D-Day, since he passed, I received all of his military items. I have everything that he carried with him, and I wear his dog tags.
That's outstanding, Jack.
Every D-Day, I wear his dog tags, whether I'm going to work or it's the weekend or what have you.
There's that soft heart we like.
Yeah, and I learned a lot from him about the reality of it. And I can't tell you whether or not I would have been curled up in the corner of one of those landing boats when that door opened, because he said there was about 16 guys in front of him, and they were his shield and his friends.
Yep.
And he had to walk on them.
Sure.
And the
stories
are
just... They got chewed up by the machine guns, or they went outside the boat and it was 10 feet deep in water with all that gear, and they drowned how many of them guys?
Absolutely horrific. And when he found out he had cancer later on in life, he died at the age of 78 or 79 years of age. He just said, that's okay. I'm in good company. When he left.
You know, that is just amazing, that kind of guys. You know, my stepfather, Rocco.
Yeah.
Rocco was a World War II veteran. He was from New York, and he signed up when he was 17 years old, and he got himself into the Army. And Rock was supposed to be part of the wave on D-Day. And as life turned out, you know, 17-year-old Rocco had a toothache He had an abscessed tooth, and 2 days before they took off, they yanked him out of line, and they went in and they did the surgery to take the tooth out, and they said, you're not going on D-Day, or, you know, you're out of duty in the day of D-Day. He wasn't part of the wave that went up on the beach. He would have been one of them guys. Oh. He went about a week later. He was part of the group that went in a week later in that massive supply of supplies and manpower that started fighting its way across France. And Rocco, like many of our heroes from World War II, they very rarely talked about their experiences. They really don't tell you what happens. And I've heard hundreds of people tell me this, you know, over the years. Yeah, my father was there, but he doesn't really talk about it. My uncle was there, he doesn't really talk about it. Well, Rock never really talked about it. And one day my son, Alex, was doing a project for school where they were told, go find somebody in your family and videotape them and ask them questions about their life. And that was the project. So he thought about doing, you know, talking to me, talking about his mother. He said, you know what? What about Pop Rock? What if I talk to Pop Rock? So we had Rock come over for dinner. And we had no idea what we were going to talk about. But we brought him over and we sat down. And he was like, oh, sure, I'll tell you about my life. And he's telling about, you know, when he was a kid. And he was talked about, you know, he met Joe DiMaggio at some point in his life. He was very excited about that. And Alex asked him a couple questions about, well, weren't you in World War II? Now, we had all been having some adult beverages while we were doing this. Obviously not my son, but the rest of us adults. And Rocco was having a couple glasses of wine. And he started talking about World War II. And Alex asked him, were you in World War II? He goes, yes, I was. And it's when we heard about the toothache. He goes, I was supposed to go in the D-Day wave, and I didn't go because I had a toothache, you know. But I went a couple days after and fought my way across Germany. And he's telling this story, and we're all kind of like, wow, this is, what did you see, Rock? And I was on an anti-personnel carrier, one of the armored personnel carriers with three other guys. And their job was to ride behind, I guess, the tanks. And the tanks would do what they would do, and the men would flash, go throughout the town and subject the population to liberation or arrest, whatever they had to do. And Rocco and his guys would roll up behind and help whoever needed help. He says, so they had seen a lot of fighting. They were there for quite a while, and they saw some very brutal fighting, which he didn't talk about. But you could see the conversation went from lighthearted and laughing to now he was being very serious. And all of a sudden, Rocco, this very nice guy, at the time he was probably 80 years old, Italian guy, like I said, he was thrilled to meet Joe DiMaggio. All of a sudden he stops, and he's got a tear in his eye. Mm. And we're looking at him going, Rock, what's the matter? He goes, well, we were over there fighting for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, and it was really, really bad. And I don't want to talk about the things that I saw, but we pulled into this town, and there was these three little German boys. They're little kids, 6, 7 years old, maybe 8 years old, and they're playing in a field. And me and my buddies, we were only 18 years old, and we saw these kids, and it was like, after all the horror that we had seen in our couple of weeks in real combat, to see these little kids running around a field playing was really wonderful. And we were sitting there just smiling as we're driving along in our truck. He goes, and all of a sudden, one of the kids stopped and bent down and picked something up. And it was a grenade. And it went off in his hand when he picked it up. He goes, so we drove over in our truck, and the first boy that had the grenade, he was dead. Obviously killed by the grenade. The second boy was maimed so badly we knew he wasn't going to survive. And the third boy was hurt almost as bad. We loaded the two boys that we thought could save onto the truck, and we drove them to the MASH hospital and brought them in. And we were sitting there now, mesmerized, listening to the story. It got even more intense because Rocco stops, and now he's crying. I'm crying. Mm-hmm. Everybody's crying. And he goes, I never told anybody that story until just now. These are the heroes. These are the people in our military. And that's why when you see them, say, hey, thanks for your service. I do it every single time I see them. You surprise some of them. You walk up, hey, soldier, Navy guy, Navy girl, thanks for your service. It's an important thing. We have to let them know how much we care about them.
You're in your local diner. You're in your local restaurant. On your way out, pick up their tab and see how good you feel.
Mm. Jack, that's a great idea. I know when I was a cop, sometimes once in a while people would do that when you were in line. You know, it was kind of weird. And like, you go up there and you could only eat in the places you could trust. You know what I mean? Because people see in uniform, which are, you know, McSpitty, we would call it. We don't want one of them. But if you could eat in a place that you would trust, you get up to the counter like, oh, that guy and his family over there, they just bought you dinner. Or that mom over there, her and her kids, they just bought you dinner. And it's like, you know, you didn't want people to do that, but you could understand that they cared about you, and that's a way to show you. So you're right. Buy somebody dinner. I bought a military guy a drink in the airport recently. I fly around a lot now. And I bought him a drink, and I thought that was pretty cool. But buying a meal, Jack, that's actually a great idea. Now, Bill, we were talking earlier about the news situation and Vietnam. Did you have something you wanted to add?
I sure did. I have to apologize. I made a big, big gaffe.
A faux pas.
Yeah. I had said that Fox News had initiated the scroll that you see at the bottom of the of news articles during Vietnam. And while, yes, Fox News did initiate it, it wasn't during Vietnam. It was during 9/11. And then CNN followed with the same thing and MSNBC, but it was Fox News that did initiate it. I had said that previously on a previous episode of Chasing Justice, and I just wanted to make sure that I set the record straight.
Well, we don't hold your facts too strongly here. I mean, ever since your 107th birthday, it's forgivable.
That's very, very good. I think you called me Bob last week, but that's all right. You know, I don't mind. In the light of that, that's great though, Bill, because you know what? We are transparent here. We give you our feelings. We give you our thoughts. You know, I had one guy on the Twitter. It was pretty funny. Malcolm from Malcolm Out Loud had made a comment, and he included me in it. And it was something about the president and this bogus investigation that's going on. And I commented back. And all of a sudden, this guy gets on and he says, oh, yeah, at Pangaro Global. Oh, yeah, Malcolm Out Loud, you're going down. It's about to happen. You're all going down. And I'm like, who are these people? Going down for what? For a comment? We're just trying to give you our feelings, trying to tell you what we think. You know, what our life experience is, and that's part of what we're trying to do here. So I don't get that. So D-Day, I thought the president's speech was excellent. I don't know if you heard it. I was actually awake. I thought the speech was absolutely excellent. I thought he got along with Macron pretty well for the moment. You know, I look at body language, and you know they know the spotlight's on them, and they're trying to highlight their relationship, but they were pretty comfortable with each other. The wives seemed pretty comfortable with each other. My favorite part was when they got done with their speeches and the moment of silence, they waded into the crowd of soldiers who were there, American soldiers. And these were actually the guys that climbed those hills. These were the guys that came up on Gold Beach and Juneau Beach and all the other beaches where they hit the Nazis back. And these were the men, but the numbers are dwindling. I remember when Reagan gave his famous speech there was a couple thousand people. Now there was a couple hundred. I think they said there's 380 World War II veterans dying a day of natural causes. Yeah. You know, they're getting older, and there'll come a time when that last light is going to go out, and that moment in our history, where right now there's living history, people who lived through it, that last light is going to go out, and that entire episode will be relegated to the books and to memory and to movies. It will no longer be a living history. So I think the greatest generation, is that what they're called?
Yes.
Brokaw?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think they really are. Just look at the things that they do. Do you think we could do that again today? Could we mount that kind of a campaign?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a stronger military now under President Trump than we've ever
but
had.
Would it be hitting beaches, or would we annihilate those beaches with air power?
Yeah, well,
those pillboxes wouldn't exist for very long.
No, not at all. Let me tell you a quick story. I'll try to make it as brief as possible. My dad served in the Philippines during World War II, and he said that the greatest sight that he ever seen during the war, they were digging foxholes on the beach. In I forget where in the Philippines, but the greatest sight was watching P-38s, which is a dual fuselage, long-winged aircraft, flying across the beach doing victory barrel rolls. He said, "You knew we were going to win the war."
Yeah, that's amazing. But I look at that and I say, you know, could we mount that? I think you're right. I think we have the military, the men and women in our military today. would absolutely answer the call. Do I have confidence that our politicians would be able to wage that war, or if they would be the ones who would actually cause the problems? But I know the military would be good. But when I look at that and I say, would you be scaling up walls anymore? You know, I always wondered, why didn't they pound the hell out of those things with B-52s before they sent them boys up there? I mean, just wipe that all out. How did they get through that? That was crazy.
They did, but they had pulled back. Many of the troops had pulled back away from the coast. Many of the big guns that were just south of Omaha were pulled back away from the point. So when the Rangers first got up there to take those guns were not in place.
They had moved them.
They had moved them. They had an inkling that they were coming. They thought that they were coming on the Pointe du Calais,
right,
which is north. But they were still ready with the Atlantic Wall that was designed by Erwin Rommel. They were ready for it.
I think he was home on vacation, because that's how confident they were. They weren't coming just yet.
They were very
but
confident.
What an amazing thing to have 160,000 men went across that English Channel that morning. 160,000 of them.
And again, so many of them, as my uncle had told me, so many of them, such as himself, were on their second up. In other words, they re-enlisted. He was a motorcycle messenger in Italy during the first wave, and during the second wave after he re-upped. He had had enough of it. He was sick of it, but he wasn't about to let anybody else do his fighting for him.
That's amazing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're rolling to the end here of Chasing Justice for this week. I want to thank Bill, and I want to thank Jack for being here with me. I really love the guys in the neighborhood, and I love having you on. You know, this last segment is important. Always remember the sacrifices of our military, our law enforcement, anybody who does things for our communities, first aid, our corrections officers. We can't forget them. They work the hardest precincts in the country. You know, these people that go out there and put their lives on the line so that we can have a better life. And the D-Day group, absolutely an amazing story. Learn more about it. It's really wonderful. We'll see you next on Chasing Justice. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.